Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie, Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills.
1850 715 815.
Hello there and a very good afternoon to you.
For many, many years, that was the voice that told listeners that the Liveline was open. And today we're devoting Liveline to the memories of listeners who trusted Marion Finucane with the stories of their trials and tribulations. 51551 is our text number. Katie Hannan in the chair today. Mark, you took umbrage at an item on Liveline way back in 1987.
That's right, Katie. Yeah. There was an item on Colm Keane was in Marion's studio, and he was presenting an item on restaurant kitchens and hotel kitchens. And he was a bit harsh on, as I felt at the time, and talked about when you send your steak back to the kitchen, what the chef might do with it and throw it and send it back out. And that's what provoked the controversy. And in the course of it, I said to Marion, if you were having a dinner party and you had all your guests had arrived and you were taking the roast out of the oven and the roast fell on the floor, the kitchen floor, what would you do, Marion? And Marion said, well, I don't know what I would do. And I said, I know what you would do, Marion. You'd pick it up and you'd dust it off and you'd serve it and everybody would be very happy. So that's what provoked it. And then one thing led to another, and I said, Marion, why don't you try doing my job for a day and I'll do yours? And Marion said, you're on. And that's how the matter progressed.
And what was your job at the time, Mark?
Well, I had a news agency in Bray, and it was at the launch of the... It was a busy time, actually, because the National Lottery had launched the ticket sales for the first time. And so it was ideal. It was a good PR promotion, and Marion took up the challenge, and she did the shop while I did the show. But I must say that I think Marion did a hell of a lot better running the shop than I did running the show. But it was.
Did she really go down and stand behind the counter for the day?
She did. I'll tell you now. It was a big event. The media were all there at the shop, and there were no mobile phones, Katie, at the time. So we had one phone in the shop and one in the butcher's next door. And between the jigs and the reels, anyway, they managed to run the show.
And so Marion was down there selling lottery tickets in Bray.
She was selling lottery tickets, yeah.
And you were up here in Dublin in a studio talking about what?
It was just in Bray, Katie, you know, so it wasn't that difficult. But I was running the show from her seat in the studio, and we conversed a bit, you know, during the show. And then the essence of the show was it was the same day as the budget was being presented, and Ray McSharry was the Minister for Finance at the time, and he was presenting a budget. So the producer decided, Julian Vinyls, Barry Desmond would come in to he was the opposition spokesman on social welfare, and he would come in as my guest. And the researcher did a lot of research, and I had all this stuff on social welfare, and then the listeners would phone in, and that was the essence of the program.
And how did you manage?
Well, I have to say I was very nervous. It was when I issued the challenge the previous week, that was much easier. I was in my own environment in the shop. But when you go in and you take over in there, as you're a professional, Katie, so it's second nature to you. But for somebody like me, it was difficult enough. But everybody was very helpful, and we got through it anyway. And I was delighted to get through it. And my wife, she had to work that day. She was working in St. James's Hospital. And one of the teachers in Prez in Bray, Geraldine Moore, she's from Dingle, and she helped out with the kids and that it was a residential unit, so we had the residents and the shop at the same time. And after the show, then I came back and I met Marion and John, and we went down to the local pub for a drink, and they were just lovely couple, and
And how did what did Marion say about her experience of being behind the counter of the shop for the day?
I think she probably was a little bit nervous about it too. But you know, and it was great. It was great for her. Well, it was great. All the neighbours and all the people, because there was huge publicity, Katie, at the time. This was a different time. It's 32 years ago now, and it's a different time in radio. Are in media, shall we say. And there was huge publicity at the time. Like, it was all on the Irish Times, on the Evening Herald, the Evening Press. Even the build-up to it was all, there was a lot of publicity. I have a lot of cuttings from that. And it was, I think most of the credit must go to a journalist. She was a freelance journalist who used to come into the shop, Siobhan O'Neill. And she worked for one of the evening papers, and she kept asking me, every day, any scandal, any news, Mark? And I say no. And then one day she came in and I said, Siobhan, I got something for you. And I said, you'll have to wait. And then I told her. So she had done some pre-publicity about the show. And then when I went in that morning, I was on the Gay Byrne show. He interviewed me before the show, on his 9 o'clock show. And he said, you know, he said to me, I said, I'm not worried about you, but I'm really worried about Marion in the shop. But I think
wasn't it extraordinary that Marion took up that
absolutely
that challenge?
Yeah, she's wonderful. She's just a wonderful lady. We're all very sad about it, and I'm sure you're all very sad there. She was just wonderful. Yeah, she took up the challenge. Yeah, and so that was how it happened. And It was a great
incredible memory indeed for yourself and for the business and for people down there. Mark, I'll move on. I want to go to Myra. Good afternoon.
Hello,
to you, Myra.
Hi, how are you?
It's, I think, 20 years since you rang into Liveline with a story that I think Marion was quite astonished by.
Yes, it was. It was 20 years ago. I was expecting my last child and I had a blowout on the motorway coming up from Wexford. And I limped into a garage in Bray, and the young lad behind the counter was going to help me change the tyre because I was very obviously pregnant. I was about 7 months pregnant. And the manager came out and stopped him from helping me. So it was... It was afterwards, when I thought about what had happened, I thought, God, that's not right. He was refusing to help somebody who needed help. And never mind that it was a pregnant woman. It could have been an elderly gentleman, or it could have been any number of people looking for help. So when I rang in, straight away, she got what I was talking about and helped me then to articulate it.
Well,
so she was
such a
lady.
I think, Myra, we might have a clip of that moment on Liveline from 1998.
I just couldn't believe that this was the attitude, and it wasn't the forecourt's attendant's fault. It was this guy, the manager.
Who happens to be on the other line. Martin, good afternoon to you. Martin,
hello,
you're the manager in this particular garage. Why wouldn't you let them change your wheel?
Well, first of all, I'd like to apologise to the lady. It's not right that she should have not got good service at the station and that she was left like that. But unfortunately, Marion, the society we live in, we're not insured to change wheels or to change tyres. We're a petrol station shop. We don't do any servicing or repairs to cars, and we don't carry insurance for it. And that's the reason for it, that it's just a society we live in. We can't take that chance.
And why didn't you tell her yourself?
I wasn't talking to her. I was in the office, and the lads they know, or they should know, they're not covered by insurance to change wheels.
Well, can I ask you, Martin?
Yeah.
I mean, you've said you apologise, and fair enough. But if Myra pulled in there tonight, what would you do?
the fact of the matter is, we're not insured to change wheels.
And that was Marion putting the manager of that Statoil petrol station through the hoops there. Myra, do you recall it all now?
I recall it so clearly because she got on to, she picked up straight away what it was. She was so good at picking out what was the nitty gritty of the story was that somebody was refusing to help another human being, and it's just the way the world was going. And she did it with such ease and such grace. I mean, she was a pleasure to talk to at any time or listen to. And she'd be so sorely missed because she was so good at it.
And did it, I mean, the fact that you even thought, okay, this is terrible, this shouldn't be happening, I know what I'll do, I'll ring Marion.
I was on my way to a meeting, and when I got to the meeting and explained why I was late and what had happened, everybody was horrified sitting around the table and said, you have to talk to somebody about that. That's not right, that people should be treating people like this. You know, if this is a sign, it was interesting. This was a side thing, but a week later, I got an email from a friend of mine who was living in San Francisco at the time, wanting to know why was I being spoken about in the Shannon. And what had happened was David Norris had picked up on had heard the interview and had gone in to the Shannon and asked the question, why is a pregnant woman being treated like this? Is this the society we want to live in? And that was what she did so well. She was so good at it. It wasn't about me. It was about people treating people right.
Absolutely.
And she was all I've listened to her since 1979 and all the way along. It was always her kindness that came through. It didn't matter who she was interviewing, everyone was spoken to in the same way, with respect, but she just had this kindness. She was such a lady, and she'd be so sorely missed because there was so much more there. I was just so shocked last night when I heard it. I just thought, oh my God, that is such it's such a shame. Such a lovely lady.
So, absolutely, Myra. Stay with us, Paddy Moran. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Your memory of meeting Marion goes back to 2004?
2004, she visited the 90th Battalion out in Monrovia on the 15th of March. And I must say she was very tactful, very sensitive and understanding of the situation in Liberia at that stage, and highlighted that on the radio.
And you were serving out there as a peacekeeper? Paddy,
I was battalion commander of the 90th Battalion, 1st Battalion, into Liberia after the Civil War. And it was a very difficult period in the history of Liberia. And we had a very successful tour of duty with an Irish-Swedish contingent, which I happened to be selected as the boss man of that contingent.
And tell me, in that situation, you're far away from home, you're in a very, as you say, sensitive situation. How important was it that somebody of the stature of Marion Finucane would come to visit?
Well, Marion Finucane was one of the primary, if you like, ladies or reporters that came to us along with Charlie Bird, but Marion in particular. And she had a particular gift of identifying issues and highlighting them. And she had a huge listenership. And that was very important from a Defence Forces point of view. And from an Irish point of view, the contribution that Ireland was making to peacekeeping in such a sensitive area. And Marion was the ideal lady to express that and to identify the issues that were on the ground, which she did and stayed with us for a number of days and really put her heart and soul into it. And she also visited the aid centre with Father Brendan Madden, our chaplain from the Air Corps. And she saw at first hand the sufferings of people in that particular area also. So we really appreciated the amount of time and effort that she put into her visit and the issues that she highlighted.
And I imagine in the conditions you were in out there, it wouldn't have been the lap of luxury.
No, Marion was prepared to rough it with us for the period that she was there and just fit in with the group and see exactly what was happening on the ground and relate that back to the Irish public.
Paddy, thanks for that. I want to go to Greg now. Greg Daly, good afternoon to you.
Hiya, Kate. How are you doing?
Tell me your memory of Marion.
I was just explaining there beforehand that... I'll always remember going on the phone to Marion a couple of years, maybe 20-odd years ago, when she used to do all the shows there, you know, like Joe's doing at the moment and yourself. And a topic came up in a bar in Cork City. It was called the Lobby Bar. And the topic at the time was with all my brothers. I used to go, we used to meet every week, every weekend, and we used to go in there. But at that particular time, none of the glasses, this is the, whether to be beer or stout, and all of us were at stout at the time, the five of us, and none of them were labelled. And of course, I was telling Marion this, and I said, of course, Marion, I said, as the night went on, I said, and the pints went down and things like that. Sure, pints were getting, the stout was getting mixed up. And of course, I won't say arguments went down, but it was, this is my one. And I happened to say to the lads at the time, you know what, I'm going to ring Marion Finucane on a Monday and I'm going to put it to her and see what she threw it out there, you know. So, which I did, you know, and Marion listened and she, of course, she did have a good laugh off of this, and she said, of course, the more you drank, the more you've forgotten. I said, you're dead on. I said, that's the way it went, you know. And of course, we had a bit of a banter and things like that back and forth. And I explained to her that the three stouts here in Cork were definitely the Beamish, the Murphy's, and the Guinness at that particular time. Now, there's other home breweries around the place now, but those particular stouts. And I said, each one of the brothers individually drank their own. And of course, as I said, in swings and roundabouts, as the night went on, it went on to different tables and different, we were picking up. And I said, Marion, you know, with your show and things like that, you should actually throw her out there. And she said, well, if they're listening now at the moment, we see how it goes, you know. And to be fair, a couple of months later, as we still continue to go in to the Lobby Bar and other hospital bars around the place, glasses came in with their trade names on them. So I'm putting it down that it was Marion Finucane's show.
You're taking personal pride in the different glasses.
Exactly, yeah. So every time I drink my own stout at the moment, whichever one it may be, and I see it, it brings me back a memory that I actually spoke to Marion Finucane in connection with labels being printed on glasses. So that's where I'm putting it down for, that Marion Finucane changed all that, you know.
Now, there is a legacy of Marion Finucane we didn't know about until now, Greg Daly in Cork. Yeah. Thanks for alerting us to yet another one.
That's it, Kate. That's another one for her, you know.
For the
that's
book.
Another one for
indeed
her,
it is. 51551 is our text number.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Niamh Fitzpatrick, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Niamh, we're coming up to the third anniversary of the Rescue 116 crash and the shocking loss of your sister, Dara. Marion had many standout interviews over the years, but I think many will remember the extraordinary interview she did with you and with Kieran Smith's sister, Orla. It was just a few months after that tragedy, wasn't it?
It was, and may I first just give my condolences to Marion's family and to our colleagues there in RTE. I just have to say that first before I say anything else. It was, I think, 3 months. It was July the 1st, and Dara had died on March the 14th. So it was very raw. And I remember that day actually being I was quite nervous. I was still in shock. I remember speaking really quickly. But Marion was so soothing. She just put you at ease straight away. And I remember that just right from the start, because we were talking about sibling loss. So in that studio was Orla Smith, myself and Marion, three women who had known quite a lot of loss in their life. And it was quite emotionally charged in many times that didn't really come across necessarily in our voices at all times, but in the studio it was. And there were times when I saw Marion upset, I could just see the glisten in her eyes. She was upset herself. And she was just so kind and so compassionate at a time that was so hard.
Kind and compassionate, but my memory of that interview, Niamh, is also very forthright in how she questioned you and Orla.
Yeah, she went. I actually remember she went straight in at the start by saying that one of you has a body and the other doesn't. So she really wasn't afraid right from the beginning to get in and address the topics that were difficult. But what she did then was she stepped back and she gave us each space to speak. So she asked that difficult question, but she asked it with kindness and gentleness and compassion, and then she gave us that space to speak and to say what we wanted and what we were able to say about it. And she addressed things like blame. I think that was maybe the first time I'd ever been asked, certainly publicly, about whether I had any sense of blame about this. And she explored that. She explored the headlines at the time and some of the difficult things that we as sisters had to read about our siblings. And again, she asked the question directly, but she left us the space afterwards, and she respected our boundaries when it was really clear that we were going to say so much, but we didn't want to talk about anything else.
Yeah, that was, I mean, that is an extraordinary skill to take, to be able to take the interview right up to the outermost boundaries, but not cross the line.
Yeah, and I think even the fact that, you know, when anybody has a loss in their own life and they talk to other people who have loss, it's like when you see their reactions, and our, both Orla's and my reactions would have been quite a lot around shock at that time. So we might have come across more composed than we would have done maybe if it was 6 months later. But Marion would still have been seeing in our faces a mirror and a reflection and an echo of loss in her own life. So that, for me, made it even all the more amazing that she was able to conduct that interview in the way that she did. And the response I know that I got afterwards was immense. The phone just lit up, email, calls, text messages, because I think it was quite a long interview and it felt almost at the time like a chat around a kitchen table. But what she managed to do was to have a sensitive conversation around a really difficult subject and event in Irish life with two people who were some of the people in the middle of that event. But she managed to do it in such a way that it just touched everybody. And I think when you're grieving, a lot of people have such a need to speak, to talk, to speak about their loved one. And she let us both do that. And I just think, I remember at the time feeling so grateful for getting the opportunity.
My memory as well is just how she took you through the story of how you learned of what had happened, where you were in a very step-by-step way, which brought us all into your home, into your heads at that time.
Yeah, she started at the beginning and she did that gently. I mean, she did start off right at the start saying you two were in different positions. But she did then go gently as she moved through the story, and she did it chronologically. I mean, I think when you're grieving, and certainly when you're in those early days of grief, concentration isn't great. You're a bit all over the place in so many ways. But what she did was she just gently and logically took us through each of our own experiences. And I keep saying that word space, but that's what I remember that day. There was no hurry. There was no rush. Each of us could speak. She just gave us that space. And I remember at one point she asked me about something, and I ended up telling her that I had to tell my father that Dara had died and that I wouldn't wish that on anybody. And at the time when I said it, I was upset, and I could see it in her face. She just looked across at me and she was just so compassionate and kind about it. So even in the midst of that logical look at the events of March 14, 2017, she also brought that human side into our telling of that story, if you like.
And of course, there was also the understanding that it was a huge national event that so many people were so invested in, because they would have known your sister, they would have, you know, seen her over the years in television programmes or heard about her. And that sense that this was your personal story, but also had to be treated as a national current affairs event.
Yes, and I think it was that balance of getting the two sides of that right that was quite a mark of Marion. I often felt with her, and I did that day, that she was probably asking the questions that the listener is asking when they're in their car or in their kitchen or whatever. So, but she did that from both sides, the human side and also that interest side from the national perspective. But she just did it so well. And I'd never met her before. She'd interviewed a few people I knew all right, my father included it over time, but I hadn't met her myself. And it was a special moment, and one I had done a few interviews really after Dara died, but that was one of the ones that certainly stood out for me.
Oh, and I think, Niamh, I speak for a lot of people when I say it stood out for very, very many listeners out there. Why did you agree to do it?
When you lose a sibling, there isn't, if you think about it, there isn't even a word for when you lose your sibling. You know, so it's not widow or widower, but you're losing this person who's such a part of your childhood, who's part of the fabric of your life right from your earliest days. So I was 3 when Dara was born. So besides my parents, she's the person I've known longest, as well as my twin in my life. And Marion approached us, myself and Orla Smith, and asked if we would be interested in talking about sibling loss and what it was like to lose a sibling and what it was like as a sibling to be in the middle of all of the things that were going on at that time. And that for me was why I said yes, it was the sibling thing.
Niamh, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing that story. I know it is, as we say, coming up to the 3rd anniversary, but obviously it's a loss that goes on.
Well, thank you, Katie. I appreciate that. And I genuinely do appreciate you asking me to come on and talk about Marion. And I'm grateful to get the chance to say that that was an interview that actually helped me at the time. And I think helped a lot of people. I think it's important to have those conversations around grief and around life and the real, you know, the realities of life. And when you have somebody like Marion Finucane who creates an environment where she can help somebody tell that story, such a difficult story, I think it's good for people listening, but it's also good for those people telling. So I appreciate you letting me come on today to say thanks for that.
Much appreciated, Niamh. Niamh Fitzpatrick there. Thank you. Sharon Nivahuna, good afternoon.
Hello. Hi, good afternoon. Your colleague there gave me a ring. It was very unexpected, but I have to say, I'm sure I speak for so many people around the country who are really, really upset today at the profound loss of what I consider and my family consider the greatest broadcaster on RT Radio. Her absence is felt so deeply. My family and I, we live in different pockets of the country, and Marion has united us every weekend with her fabulous broadcasting, and we would be chatting to each other throughout the programme, texting each other, are you listening to this, are you listening to that? And I have a yoga class every Saturday morning, and I make sure my yoga class is finished before Marion's programme starts, so I can, so I don't have to miss a minute. Even when I do my shopping, my headphones are in, so I lose none of the programme. I have to say, my weekends, it will be very, very, very different because of her loss. It is a great void in so many of our she's a great void in so many of our lives. And it's going to be a very unusual state of affairs without her, to be honest, for many of us, you know. Sorry if I appear upset.
I can hear it in your voice, Sharon, but
yeah,
I'm
trying
sure
to keep it together because she's a legend, you know, to be honest, you know.
What was it? I mean, you say you never missed a show. You would make sure your weekend was organized around it so that you would. Yeah. What was it? What were you afraid to miss?
It's, well, obviously her skill as a presenter, her personality. You know, she covered the most diverse range of topics, current affairs, human stories. There was nothing that I just wasn't interested in. She was so professional, her way of dealing with her panel. She was so engaging, so completely engaging. And it was all down to her professionalism and her personality. Yeah, she was just so compelling, a compelling broadcaster. She made, she was so informative. I relied on her actually so much for information, you know. She really educated me too, to be honest with you, you know.
Sharon, thank you. Thank you for taking the time to share that with us. John, hello. John O'Keefe, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
You were interviewed by Marion, I imagine, a number of times.
Yeah, a number of times, as I suppose a good number of people listening were. And I remember the first time, which would have been maybe about 20, 25 years ago, the programme was on at 9 o'clock. And for those who haven't been interviewed in RTE particularly, I think I'm not giving any secrets away by saying that presenters pride themselves on you coming in at the last minute. I mean, when you're on a show, all you want to do is get in, have a little chat with the presenter beforehand and say everything is going to be okay, isn't it? But of course, they're running from item to item. But this particular morning, she was on at 9 o'clock, just after the news. I was taken in at the last minute, as is normal, but there's no sign of Marion. The news comes on, there's no sign of Marion. The ads are coming on. At this stage,
are you sweating at this stage, John?
Oh, I'm assuming, because I've already gone through my head, there are four and a half Croke Parks listening to this, so that's in my head. And I'm, by the way, I'm about to talk about psychopaths, so obviously the first question is going to be, and it was, would you consider yourself one, John? And I'm sitting there waiting for, she hasn't come in, and I'm looking in the studio. Nobody, they look quite calm. And literally at the last second of the last ad, she comes in, and before she sat down, she puts down her papers and she says, hello there, and a very good morning. And it was genius. And then she said something like, you know, the first question is going to be John O'Keefe about psychopathy. And on it went. But I mean, she was like that in every single interview. And what she did was, she was very friendly, even though I wasn't her friend. She was incredibly friendly. I was on a panel discussion with her, and we were talking about victims of homicide, which I still represent. And she became emotional. I was describing what it's like down in court. I was just describing the Graham Dwyer trial, and she had to cut to an ad break. And in one sense, it was that professional. Everyone's talking about her professionalism quite rightly. It's because she mixed up this personable nature with this professional nature. So the next time I was to go on, which I think was January of last year in a professional capacity, as spokesperson for the GRA as I was then, I shouldn't have assumed that it was going to be all sweetness and light. Yeah, it was for the first couple of minutes, but then, of course, she's asking the questions everybody wants to ask. And I'm sort of, oh, dear, you're not my friend, I forgot. But she was brilliant like that, because she was fair to everybody. But she, you know, we're talking about a lot of people who've passed recently in their professionalism, and it can't be doubted. But for me, she was the best of the best of her generation. I mean, forget about the way she brought women journalists forward and feminist issues, and all that is true. But she was unbelievable, because she genuinely cared and she genuinely was such a professional. And without exception, I think she was number one.
Absolutely. John O'Keefe, thank you for that. Thank you. I want to go to Derek McQuaid. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
You were also interviewed by Marion.
I was indeed. In fact, it was in April of 2014, a couple of months before the arrival of the Giro d'Italia professional bike race in Ireland, which I helped organise. And I was certainly very struck by how comfortable she made me when I entered the studio. It was amazing. I'd obviously sent materials in, and she'd studied them on what the Giro d'Italia is, and the interview really went very well. She was so professional and made me feel at ease. I've subsequently moved to Italy, and every weekend, Saturday and Sunday, I listen to Marion, and it was a great way to keep in touch with what's going on at home. And really, most weekends I listen, and I feel very proud of how good the programme was. It was an international programme. I mean, Ireland is famous for looking outward, but when you're over in Italy, you know, the news tends to be all about Italy. But listening to Marion's show every weekend from here, it was very much about the world as well as Ireland, and I was always very proud to listen to Marion, even though I was far away. And very sad to hear the news yesterday. And then I didn't really know, but it turns out that she was born in St. Canice's Road in Glasnevin, literally about 200 yards from where I grew up. I didn't realise that she was from my own neighbourhood, you know.
Yeah, she's an extraordinary legend, as you say, and that we hear that a lot from people who are living away from home, that those 2 hours on a Saturday and a Sunday,
magic.
Yeah, it's a lifeline back to base.
Absolutely, and of course, you never knew what was going to be discussed. I mean, started off the newspapers, but just the way the flow of the show, how she handled difficult guests, and how she handled, you know, funny guests, and just an incredible professional, and a credit to Ireland, and a credit to RTE for giving her the space to blossom in the organisation. You know, a couple of years after she interviewed me, I was in Washington, D.C., attending the St. Patrick's Day reception in the White House, which turned out to be Obama's last St. Patrick's Day reception. And, of course, we're all in the room, and Obama's quoting Irish poets, as well as Biden quoting Irish poets. And I was with my Italian fiancée, Paola, at the time, and bumped into Marion, and, oh, wasn't the Giro great success? I mean, she really had, obviously, an amazing memory. But we were there watching Obama and Biden quoting Irish poetry and thinking, well, who's going to be the next president? And lo and behold, we know who it was. But she was so amazing to meet, even in a weird context like that. She was just a real lady and an Irish, another word is thrown around a bit too much, but she was a real icon of Irish public life.
Absolutely, absolutely. We'll take a break there. 51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Or joe@rte.ie. Father Iggy O'Donovan, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Keith. Good afternoon.
I think long-time listeners will remember you as a regular voice on Liveline back in the early 90s.
Yes, at the time I was based in Drogheda. And it was really what happened there was a group of young people came together and felt that in some way or other they could make their Catholicism relevant to modernity. And we tried a few experiments.
Which was a fairly radical thought back 20 years ago.
Well, interesting enough, Kate, we did an opinion poll at one time among about 4,000 teenagers, which was nearly every secondary student in Drogheda. And what struck us was the terrible level of disengagement. And we said, we must try something. So we tried a few experiments with the liturgy in that. I admit, ultimately, it failed because the powers that be didn't want it. But it was an attempt. And Marion took us under her wing, and she featured us several times on Liveline, as it was then, back in the 90s. And with simple things we tried, like I remember Mrs. Mary O'Rourke preaching the homily for us one Sunday on positive aging. Another young student from Trinity, Myrtle McGinty, spoke about being young, Catholic and female. Simple things like the homily being done by people like that. And also we experimented, shall we say, a little bit with music as well. And that led to some colourful incidents, shall we say. But Marion, all the way along, she took a keen interest in it and regularly got in touch and indeed featured us regularly on Liveline.
And did you got a belt of a crozier for your troubles, I believe?
On and off, yes. Shall we say I've been promoted to the back benches. But in any event, but one what does come to mind, the young people, they came up with two songs. One was a translation of Hey Jude in Irish, which they used as a responsorial psalm. And the second one was a great hit at the time, the mid-90s, by singer Joan Osborne, What If God Was One of Us, a slob like one of us. And the students sang that, and there were some protests about it. But anyway, it made its way onto Liveline. I still recall Marion played the song on Liveline. She could see nothing wrong with it. But she was a tower of support to us and I would consider a good friend.
But I suppose now that sounds fairly innocent to today's ears. But if we go back to now 30 years ago, I suppose, the early 90s, that was quite a radical thing to do, wasn't it?
It was. And today now, if anybody, say, under 40 finds it hard to imagine some of this, but we were at the time, you know, it was a homogeneous society. Over the power of the church was very, very overwhelming. And many ways culturally incestuous and so forth. Now, we weren't attacking the old system, nor were we being any way being disloyal, but we felt there was room for some experiment, some change, and we felt it was staring us straight in the face. And this group of young people, mainly, nearly all girls, incidentally, nearly all female, which is interesting. But the early 90s was an interesting period in some ways with the various Marys, but it was Mary Robinson, Mary O'Rourke, Maura Geoghegan Quinn, Marion Finucane. A group of, if you like, the ladies who shook the system. They were fantastic. And so we thought there was an opening there. And so we tried, albeit with little success in the end, but at least to try and to fail is one thing, but not to try at all is certainly to fail.
Didn't you have to go on with Marion to defend Mary Robinson at one stage?
I did indeed. It was an unusual attack on Mary Robinson that it came from Dr. Noel Brown, who would normally would be singing from the same hymn sheet as Mrs. Robinson, you would think. But I do recall he had an article in the London Times where he attacked her for her, what he called the vacuous light in the window of the Orvis. You remember the light for welcoming the immigrants?
Indeed. For the
welcoming
diaspora.
The diaspora, which actually has caught the imagination since. And we've actually discovered that Mrs. Robinson actually put her finger on the pulse there in a way that no previous president had. But yes, Marion, she gave it a big mention, I recall, on her programme, because I was very uncomfortable attacking Noel Brown because I'd be a huge admirer of his. But when he had to go at Mrs. Robinson, I just felt he was simply out of step. And Marion gave it a large part of her programme on the following day. I still recall that. But above all, she certainly was extremely interested in what we were doing or trying to do.
But I suppose if we think about that time, Father Iggy, that was when the Bishop Eamon Casey story broke, 1992.
It was, and Marion hit the nail on the head there, because one incident I recall, and I can recall it as if it were yesterday, somebody phoned in, a lady, there was a confirmation coming up, and she said, what will I tell the child? I can't think, was it a boy or a girl now? What will I tell the child about the bishop? How will I explain it? And Marion's answer was, well, simply, maybe just tell the truth. And I said, that has hit the nail on the head.
Was she considered at any time, given the platform she was given the likes of yourself, Father Iggy, was she considered anti-church?
I don't think Marion was ever anti-anything. What I'm saying is she was always so balanced, so fair. My God, she made her any interviewee feel totally at home. And my earliest memory.
But she must have been ruffling feathers, though. With
oh yeah, but no, today now, and younger listeners wouldn't probably appreciate this. Today wouldn't be ruffling any feathers, but at that time, like we were, culturally incestuous society. The church was so dominant. Those of us who tried experiments, we weren't just seen as people who were trying something new. Rather, the word disloyal would come up. You're being disloyal and creating confusion and scandal. Those words were used to us regularly, confusion. So, but at least we tried, and I think Marion saw what we were trying to do. No, I'm not blowing my own trumpet there. It was simply a simple experiment. Didn't come to much in the end, but she gave us every benefit of the doubt.
Indeed, indeed. Father Iggy O'Donovan, thank you for sharing that with us. I want to go very quickly now to Emer. Good afternoon, Emer.
Good afternoon.
You remember a very particular programme from Marion and Nell and Dearn Ní Bhriain.
I do. I think it would have been late 70s or very early 80s. And they had this gag going that mermaids really did exist. I can't remember the details, unfortunately. I wish I could remember how it actually happened. But it was so well done that I was nearly convinced that this can't be true. This really can't be true. What's going on? And then, of course, it turned out it was April the 1st. And it was absolutely hilarious. I still laugh when I think about it.
Did you actually, can you admit now, these years later, that you did for a moment believe that mermaids actually existed?
I was very tempted. And I just telling myself, you can't believe this. It can't be true. But it was so well done. I hope you could find it somewhere in the archives. I think people would get a great giggle out of it.
Well, we'll ask the producers to have a rummage around for that. It would be worth a giggle. Thank you for that.
Not at all. It's a great sad loss to us.
Sad loss, indeed.
All right.
I want to go now to, we spoke earlier with Niamh Fitzpatrick, and that was a standout interview. And I think another extraordinary radio moment that Marion Finucane was responsible for was her interview with Pauline Tully. Good afternoon, Pauline.
Afternoon, Katie.
Now, Pauline, I just to explain to people who may not have heard the interview at the time, you spoke to Marion, I think it was 2015, was it December 2015?
Yes, yeah.
And it was about the horrific abuse that you had suffered at the hands of your former partner, the former IRA member, and Gar, the killer, was involved in the gang that murdered Jerry McCabe, Pierce McCauley.
Yes, it was a few days after he was put on trial for his attack on me. That attack happened on Christmas Eve 5 years ago. It was Christmas Eve 2014. And then the following December, he was brought to court and sentenced. And he got 12 years at the time. And then Marion requested an interview with me then. So it was a few days after that, as I did the interview with her, on what had happened on that fateful Christmas Eve. But I suppose I was nervous because you're going on to talk about something that was very personal
and very traumatic, obviously.
And very traumatic, yeah. Like, it was almost a year after it had happened. But I went on, and I have to say that she totally put me at my ease. I ended up sitting in the studio talking to her. I felt like I was talking to someone in my own kitchen or sitting room here. I just relayed the story, and she asked questions and encouraged me and was in no way judgmental, was very sympathetic, and you could feel she had empathy for what I'd gone through. So, she made the interview easy to do.
Not to be dragging you over old coals, Pauline, but just for listeners who won't be familiar with your story, because it was an extraordinarily traumatic ordeal that you'd been put through. You had been in a very violent relationship.
Well, I was in a relationship where I suppose now I'm more wise to, when you're looking back to what it was like. It was a very possessive relationship, and I suppose Pierce was very controlling, or tried to control me. Now, it wasn't violent until the first time he hit me was in February 2014, and I immediately got a barring order and put him out of the house. But it was following Christmas then, and we were separated then. We got a legal separation and everything that year. It was the following Christmas that he came back and attacked me in the house. And our two sons were here in the house with me and were witness to some of what happened. I suppose, in his words, was, if I can't have you, no one else can. So, and it's happened to so many women where it's when the relationship ends that they're most in danger. And that's what happened to me. So I was lucky to survive. I was being told by medical personnel afterwards that if I had not got out of the house when I did, I would have had a heart attack. My lungs were one of them was bleeding inside, and the other one was punctured, and that I just would have ended up dying, only that I got out on time. So where I got the strength to get out of the house that day, I don't know, but I was lucky in many ways. And when I say that to people, they say, you're lucky. I say, well, I wasn't lucky it happened. I was lucky that I survived, as many, many people don't.
And I asked this to Niamh Fitzpatrick earlier in the programme, Pauline. What was it that made you do that interview, made you agree to do that interview with Marion?
I suppose there were requests coming from people, local radio here, in my own locality, and also from the newspapers, and I wasn't keen on talking to any of them. And so a researcher from Marion's team actually went and contacted my sister, because they had no direct number for me. And, they just really, really wanted to interview me. And I felt it was for the right reason. And I thought, maybe I am better going, if I'm going to talk about it on national radio rather than local. And I also felt that talking to a woman was preferable as well. And like Maureen was so experienced, and she was just, you know, she had fought for women's rights and highlighted women's issues for so many years. So I felt it was somebody that I would feel comfortable, that wouldn't have a hidden agenda. About, and talking about, you know, Pierce's past rather than what had happened in December in my home.
That it was going to be your story, not the story of Pierce McCauley.
Yes, exactly.
I think we can play a clip from that interview now, Pauline, if you bear with us.
When he did say he was sorry, did you go with the flow and forgive him, or did you resent it and not accept his apologies?
No, I would accept the apologies, because I suppose, like, when you love someone and you're in a relationship with them, and there are good times. I mean, I'm talking here about bad times. We had lots of good times as well. And we had two children. And you think, okay, are the children better off with a father, even if there are rough times? You know, all these sorts of thoughts go through your mind. Like, years ago, if somebody had said to me about being in a relationship where there was domestic violence, I would have said, oh, well, the first sight of it, I'll walk out the door. But
yes,
you don't actually do that. Well, for a start, I thought, well, he hasn't actually hit me, so therefore it's not domestic violence. But, you know, I've learned since that even the threat of domestic violence and even the verbal abuse, the emotional abuse, actually is domestic violence. And, you know, I suppose someone said to me, and I think it's a benchmark as well for a relationship, if you're in a situation where you're in fear of the person you're with, then there's something wrong.
And that was yourself there, Pauline, talking to Marion in 2015.
Yeah.
And I suppose that sense, as you said, Marion had done such groundbreaking work, had been maybe one of the first broadcasters to really interrogate the whole question of domestic violence. That's what made you feel this was the place to tell this story.
Yes, I felt, you know, as you said earlier, it was my story, and she was doing it for the right reasons, and she was doing it to highlight domestic violence. And, you know, if it was going to help somebody along the way that was listening to that, well, then I was happy to do that as well, just to get my story out. And so I felt she was sincere in her reasons for wanting to interview me.
And you said at the very start that you were relieved that there was no sense of judgment during the interview. Was that something that you were worried about going into it?
Yeah, well, you just don't know. People have different reactions to situations, but you know, like Maureen, there was no judgment there, and she was sympathetic and showed empathy as well. And I felt she wanted you to tell the story, and that was it. There was no judgment, you know. And then even callers were ringing in, and people had different points of view. And you know, I remember someone saying, "Oh, you know, well, more or less, what did I expect was going to happen, marrying him with his history of violence?" But she, you know, like, while she read out the comments and acknowledged them, I felt she was dismissive of that, you know, and it was sort of don't blame the victim, basically, what happens. You know, somebody's past shouldn't have anything to do with, you know, if they're violent towards a person, I mean, that's them, it's not the victim's fault. No.
What was the reaction after the interview?
Lots of people, I suppose, that would have been aware of a little bit of what happened, like would have been aware that I was attacked, wouldn't have known the detail of what happened that day. So there's a lot of people quite shocked by hearing exactly what had happened. And we're very impressed with the interview. I felt I got a lot of support from people.
And you were glad you did it, ultimately?
I was glad I did it, yes. I was.
Pauline Tully, thank you for joining us with that memory of a very traumatic time for you, but of an interview, as you say, that you are glad you agreed to do. And
absolutely,
they will take a break. 1850 715
815. Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Malcolm Byrne, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Malcolm, obviously you're the newly elected TD for Wexford, coming through in the most recent local election. There are not local election, what am I looking, by-election.
By-election.
Malcolm, but you had a very sensitive interview with Marion back in 2006.
Yeah, well, I suppose, Katie, those of us who are, and my story is obviously not as traumatic as that of Pauline Tully's, but I'm a gay man. I think most people know that, but I never hid the fact. But when I was a local councillor, one of the local newspapers, it's now defunct here, decided to out me on its front page, and it was picked up by the Nationals. And when you're involved in politics, you're well used to answering tough questions. But when it comes to stuff about your private life and your personal life, it's quite different.
Would you have been the only openly gay politician at that stage? I'm thinking it's many years before our Taoiseach came out.
Probably the obvious possible exception of David Norris.
Indeed.
But certainly I was the only, at the time, the only openly gay Fianna Fáil politician. And, you know, it wasn't something that I ever hid, but I never felt the need to kind of broadcast about it. And, you know, a lot of my extended family and friends would have known at the time. And I was reluctant to, you know, there were a number, as Pauline would have said previously, you know, there were a number of the national media were looking to do the interviews, and I was reluctant to do it. But I guess, you know, I'd always listened to Marion Finucane and you know, thought she was a great interviewer. And even since, and I think most people can relate to, you know, pottering around the house on a Saturday morning, Marion starts interviewing somebody and you stop what you're doing just to listen to her. So I went through the local newspaper outed me. It was carried by the Nationals, and I agreed to do the interview with Marion at the time. It was obviously very different, where I'm, you know, used to answering political questions, to suddenly to start to talk about my personal life, about being a gay man in Naughty's Ireland, about, you know, even though it was only at a local level, being in the public eye. And, you know, the word that I think a lot of people are using, and I certainly found it then, was empathy. You could see she was genuinely interested in the story, about allowing somebody to tell the story and my own experiences. And, you know, I felt afterwards it was a much better thing to do. A lot of people came up to me afterwards having heard the story. And I think, you know, what Marion did was she brought, you know, all of those kind of stories into people's kitchens and wherever they were listening, and allowed people to kind of think about things in a different way. And I even know, as somebody now involved in politics, there have been many an interview where I've been listening to Marion where I might have thought that I have a fixed view on a subject, but I listened to how she interviews somebody, and you know, she'd force you to think about it in a very different way. And, you know, certainly I looking back on it at the time, you know, the whole experience was, you know, from a personal point of view, it was difficult, but I was glad I did it. And I think, you know, of all the interviews that I would ever have done, it was the best one from a personal level that I ever did, because I know people who came up to me afterwards and said, you know, thank you for talking about that. Thank you for talking about your experiences as a gay man. And I remember meeting Marion Finucane a couple of years later. I hadn't met her since, just at an event. And in that very friendly way of her, she came over to me and just said, well, how are you getting on now? And that was, you know, that was the humanity of the woman.
Indeed. Malcolm Byrne, thank you for that. Maria King, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Katie.
You rang Marion, I think, 1995, was it?
I think it was about 1995. It seems longer ago, but I recall it was around the time that the new Brown Thomas store in Grafton Street, when they took over Switzer's and they opened. So I think that was 1995. So it would have been the first week of, I think it was around February 95, if I recall.
And it was about a television?
Well, it wasn't really about a television. They opened and they were doing this 3-year free credit, which was quite a big thing at the time, on televisions and hi-fis and the like. And I thought it was fantastic, so I went in to do it and I filled out the form. And then they said to me, that's grand, if you just take this home now and get your husband to sign it. And I said, well, why would I do that?
And this, again, let's remind people, was in the mid-1990s.
Mid-1990s, yeah. I think it was around a time that maybe things were changing for women. So I think it probably wasn't great, and probably the reason that Marion actually took it on, I think it was her thing anyway at the time. But I think with the new store opening, not to allow a woman who had the status needed without her husband's signature, was, you know, it was quite a big thing and not the way to go.
And so, just to explain, they literally said you couldn't buy a television on credit without your husband's signature on the form.
They said, I filled out all the various bits and pieces on the form. Then they said, take it home, get your husband's signature and bring it back. And I took the form home and I thought about it and I thought, I have to ring Marion with this. And then Marion said to me, will you go on air? And I said, well, OK, I guess I rang, so I will. And then she came back to me and said, if we can get the general manager of Brown Thomas, will you go on air and talk to him? And I thought, I said, OK, fair enough. So I went on, I had a chat with him. And Marion was absolutely brilliant. And I suppose the bottom line was, yes, I did get it on my own because he said they were Brown Thomas policies at the time. And she said, what's your policies? And sure, look, at, you know, I had what I needed to do it. We were joint householder, joint account over 18. I had a MasterCard in my own name. There was absolutely no reason. So, yeah, she got that for me. And it was a time, I think, of changing maybe in Ireland for women.
Yeah, do you think the manager regretted taking the call?
I don't know whether he did or not. I mean, I was surprised that he did, but I think they were only opened, and I think they hadn't given too much thought really to new policies and that, and maybe their computer files weren't totally up to date with that. I had already a card in my own name. But no, he didn't give in too easily, but he said they were policy rules, so whether they changed them or not, I'm not sure, but they were certainly changed by Marion for me anyway on that day.
OK, you struck a blow.
Absolutely.
OK, thanks for that, Maria.
OK, thanks, Katie. Take care. Bye-bye.
Barney,
McLaren.
McLaren.
That's it.
Yeah. You were followed home by Marion Finucane.
Yeah, it was due to election time. I'm not sure he was going for power at that stage. Not. It may have been Charlie Haughey, 1987, I think it was, maybe. And it was in Tralee at the CYMS hall that were bringing in results. So myself and my wife and kids were there all day, and I headed off home in the evening time, and we pulled into the yard, and then behind, there was a car followed us right in behind us and pulled up, and she got out with a microphone in her hand, and she said, oh, she said, Bertie. I said, no, Bertie. I said, my name is Barney. Oh, my God, she says, I've made a mistake. She says, I thought you were Bertie Ahern, you know. And I offered her in for a cup of coffee and all that, but she was rushing off, you know. But, you know, I got the biggest shock of my life, and she was really lovely now, you know, to speak to, an absolute gentle lady she was, you know.
And obviously very tenacious if she was willing to follow who, the person she thought was Bertie Ahern up a driveway into a house.
I was about a mile and a half out, you know, and oh my God, she did say something before, oh my God, Bertie, there's a lovely, you have a lovely place here, haven't you? And then that's when it dawned on her that I wasn't Bertie, you know.
And did you look a bit like Bertie?
I don't think so, you know. I don't really think so, no, I don't. But I don't know how she come. See, I think that day in the CYMS, Bertie was in there that day all right, you know. I seen him pondering around and tallying and all that, you know. But she said she followed me in from town anyway, you know. She said she was quite sure that I was Bertie Ahern, you know. She was adamant that I was Bertie. It took her a while to really know that I wasn't, you know.
Didn't persuade her to come in for a cup of tea anyway?
I did. No, I asked her in, would you like a cup of tea or coffee? She said, no, thanks very much. Thanks, she says, thanks very much. And she said, my God, she says, I never made a mistake like this before. Something to that effect, and I laughed it off, you know. But I found the lady a proper, gentle lady, you know. And it was just one of these experiences now I never forget anyway, you know.
Well, it's a good one for late night in the pub, that time that Marion followed me home.
It's sad that we have to come, that at our passing we're speaking about it.
Indeed.
But, you know, I spoke many times about this to people in our local pub and different pubs around Tralee about it, because I thought it was a nice thing to happen, you know.
Indeed. Thanks for that, Barney.
Thank you very much.
We'll take another break there. 1850 715 815.
Yo, Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Thomas, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
You're a long time fan of Marion's.
Yes, I've been listening for a good few years now. I would have a wee routine where I'd clean the house on a Saturday and listen to her show. And she covered a lot of topics and was, I thought, very good. And you know, no matter what position you're in and gender, she had something to suit everybody.
The standout interviews, I suppose, we spoke to Niamh and Pauline earlier in the programme. They're two that a lot of people will remember.
Yeah, and the Nuala Phelan one was another one, and Leo Varadkar's interview was the one where, I think it's Marion, where he came out on, you know, as being gay.
Yeah, I think that might have been Miriam, actually. But
oh,
but Marion did do some very memorable interviews with Leo Varadkar as well.
Yeah, but no, she was, the Nuala one was one that really stood out, you know, very, very touching.
Yeah, and I think what moved so many people was that everybody listening to it would have been aware of the relationship, the fact that they were lifelong friends. And
yeah, and I think everybody who was listening would have known somebody that was maybe suffering from cancer and whatnot, you know. But it was very, very interesting. You know, it should be sadly missed. Brendan O'Connor's very good, but in his own right, but he's not Marion, you know.
Yeah, well, that's what we're hearing from all our listeners this morning, that their Saturdays and their Sundays won't be the same. Thomas,
yeah, they'll be.
Thank you for that, Thomas. I want to go to Paul now. Paul O'Dwyer, good afternoon to you.
Hi, good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
Paul, you were on a panel with Marion on the Marion Finucane show. Going back, is it 10 years ago?
It was just about 10 years ago, back in 2010. And I suppose the first thing to say is just condolences to Marion's family and indeed the RT staff as well, you know. It was one of those times where, for myself, I was on a path to other people, and each of us had just shut our businesses. So we were on talking to Marion, and of course, the listener was always number one with Marion. So it was interesting to be in studio with her at the time, you know.
But it must have been a difficult enough interview if you were a dentist, weren't you?
That's right, yeah. I had my own practice, and I shut my practice in 2010. And I had written an article for the Irish Times, which had gone viral. And so my research team had stood up, and they asked me to come in and talk about it. So I was on with two other people. And, excuse me, I suppose from her perspective, I was made feel so much in the studio itself. She made everybody feel really comfortable with where they were. And, you know, I suppose the audience's curiosity was what we were going to do next. There was an architect actually on with us as well. And they had a really good poll, I'll always remember, to finish out. She was talking about, you know, the impact at the time of financial crisis and how it was going to affect the professions. But, you know, she was such a terrific and warm person in studio. And I'd never been on radio before, so it was quite a step into the unknown, particularly when you're so used to that voice, which is part of all of our, you know, background to the weekend, as so many people have said, you know.
Yeah, it must have been pretty intimidating if your very first radio interview is with
Marion Finucane. Yeah, exactly. You start off at the top and work from there. But she was so kind and gentle and, you know, it was the gentle probing that I think so many people have said before, in that she was a very human person to take on that idea of, you know, what would this particular person do? They've had, you know, a traumatic experience and how they would go from there. I mean, you know, and through my added life, I'd listened to her for so long with, you know, Joe Jacob famously in September 01, the same Fuenlaw 2008. And even, you know, more recently, I mean, she was always part of our backdrop here at home in Meenan. The John Le Carré interview she did there just last October. And indeed, Pat McCabe as well. I mean, she was absolutely staple, listening all the time, every weekend.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Paul, thanks for that. I want to go to Anne now. Anne Tormey, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I've just come off the air coach and I'm in an office in Dublin. I hope you can hear me.
I can hear you.
The lady called me and I was on the land on another phone and we couldn't get through. And thank you for the call this morning. I've been busy today and I just didn't have a chance to get back to you. But yes, Marion was a friend when we were very young. She's a few years younger than me. And we fought for women's rights and everything. And she had a long-standing partner she couldn't marry, as did I. And I married mine, and so did she. And so we had a lot in common on that score. But she was marvelous. She was marvelous for women's rights and divorce and second marriages and abortion. She just pushed everything. She was great. She really was fantastic. Such a shock to everyone. It really is.
Absolutely.
Yesterday when I heard, I got in touch with her friend Donald Donovan in Washington and told him he's often on the show, and he was just so shocked. None of us can believe it. But, you know, the nice thing is I don't think she was really sick. So it's great. Good way to go.
Well, I think a lot of people would say that, but not for obviously for all the people she leaves behind. And you had a long career as a diplomat.
Well, not quite a diplomat. I worked for Enterprise Ireland. We had semi-diplomatic situation. In other words, living abroad with a visa provided by the Irish government and a tax-free job. That was the best part.
But you kept
for many, many years.
You kept in touch with home.
Yeah, my husband was a diplomat. He worked in the United Nations. He wasn't my husband for the first 23 years of our relationship because there was no divorce. And his wife died, and we got married 6 weeks later, and we were married for another 23 years, and he died recently, well, a few years ago. So it was an up and downhill. It was up and downhill in those days if you weren't completely walking down the aisle in a white dress. Do you know what I mean? It really was.
Different times. That's the kind of the theme of the show today, really, is the...
I missed the whole show. I was in the airport. A friend of mine flew in, and I went out to the airport to meet him, and I got on the air coach, and it was packed. I was hoping you wouldn't call, and I just got off the air coach and came into the bank, and I'm having a meeting at the bank, and they gave me a quiet room. So that's nice.
Well, we're glad you fitted us in.
No, I didn't quite fit you in. You fitted me in. Anyway, I missed the show, but I listened to the podcast. When is the funeral? Has it been decided?
I don't think the arrangements have been made public yet, Anne, but I'm sure they
are. We're going to miss her. You know, I live in Cannes most of the time, and sometimes in New York and sometimes in New Zealand. And every Saturday and Sunday, I listen to either the show or the podcast. And I hardly ever listen to it if she's being replaced by someone else. So, God, I hope I continue to listen to it for the rest of my life. It's just such a shock. She was a formidable lady in many ways, and yet she had a lot of humility, and she was able to reach into your better senses and get the best out of you. I thought that was what was so great about her as an interviewer. She really was fantastic. RTE is going to miss her. They really are.
Absolutely. And thank you for that.
Thank you very much. And may she rest in peace.
Indeed.
She was a lovely person. Bye-bye.
And of course, her many listeners are today mourning the loss of a great broadcaster, but her husband John and her son Jack have lost a wife and a mother, and to them and to her extended family and friends and our colleagues who worked so closely with Marion over so many years, sincere condolences from everyone on the Liveline team.